The show you have selected will start directly after the next message.
Welcome to the future you. Frank Lloyd Wright once said, "Study nature, love nature, stay close to nature, and it will never fail you." At Zija, we love nature. We study nature. In India, we discovered Moringa and created Moringa Supermix, a revolutionary new combination of organic ingredients, including natural vitamins, minerals, proteins, antioxidants, and omega oils. Zija's new Moringa Supermix will help you make a change for the better. Simply click on the Zija banner on the UKHealthRadio.com homepage. Power people need power vitality.
Hello and welcome to the Yes to Life show. I'm your host, Robin Daly, and the Yes to Life show is all about integrative medicine for cancer. It's called the Yes to Life show after the UK charity Yes to Life that I founded 13 years ago to help people to access the many benefits of integrative medicine. Today's show is an unusual one. It's about a lost cancer remedy. Why, you may be thinking, would we want to do a show about something that's no longer available? Well, there are good reasons, which we'll see during the course of the show. The topic is the Cardigan Cancer Cure. Now, I first came across this some 2 or 3 years after starting Yes to Life, and I was extremely surprised to come across an unconventional approach, homegrown here in the UK, that I'd never even heard of. And I was even more surprised when I realised how much interest it had generated over many decades, only to sink almost entirely from view. My first encounter with the Cardigan Cancer Cure was through a short taster video made by Martin Walker called Odd Man Out. Martin is the author of the brilliantly researched Dirty Medicine, an in-depth investigation into what was really going on in medicine behind the scenes, the corruption and the repression of cheap alternatives that threatened the bottom line of the business of medicine. He wrote Dirty Medicine in the 1990s and followed it up with the Handbook of Dirty Medicine some years later. Further research led to a book, Cancer Curers or Quacks, and even a Radio 4 play on the subject. It's a tragic tale of the loss of a remedy with clear potential to help many people. Anyway, my interest was reignited more recently when I came across someone on a forum with the same surname as the practitioners of the Cardigan Cancer Cure, Rhys Evans. So I asked the question, and yes, it turns out that Nick Rhys Evans is a member of the family and has his own tales to tell. So I thought it would be instructive to hear the story and reflect on the forces at work in this sobering tale and what they have to tell us about our present situation. Nick lives in Canada, so I spoke to him on 2 occasions over Skype. Hi Nick, thanks so much for coming on the show to tell the story of the Cardigan Cancer Cure. It's a really extraordinary story to have as part of your family history. It all starts back in the late 1800s with Daniel and John Evans. What relation are they to you?
And they were actually my great-grandparents. And they lived in a small farm in Pennybank, Wales.
Okay. John is Daniel's brother, I think, is that right?
That's correct.
Yeah, and they both live, as you say, in Pennybank in Wales, a little village in Cardiganshire. So do you want to just start the story off? How does this whole story start?
Well, they were both seafarers. They were both fishermen, shipwrights by trade, and they ploughed the Irish Sea and the Cardigan Bay fishing, and that's what they did most of their lives. But they were country boys as well, so they'd always had an interest in herbs and the outdoors. And I believe the story started that there was a young girl down the road who had what they used to term as rodent cancer or rodent lump on her lip, and Daniel invented the salve that they applied to the lip. And as they did so over a course of treatments, it drew the cancer to the outside of the lip where this particular cancer was. and cured cancer. And I believe that's how it first started. It somewhat snowballed from there, and there were other patients, and word in small villages travels, and that's how it all began. And slowly but surely, people trickle into Penny Bank and ask for the resevens. Mostly, they would treat the local folks, but as time went by, hordes of people from all over the world descended upon this small town in Wales.
Mm. So they were, at the beginning, they were mostly treating people with cancers on the surface, on the skin, I believe.
That's correct. I think later on they specified in breast cancer.
Mm. Okay, so as you say, their reputations began to spread as they had success, and they moved on to treating cancers that were actually below the surface, like breast cancer. And so do you want to just describe the process that, as far as you know it, of what they went through when treating, say, a breast cancer?
Absolutely. From what I'm told by my mother, they would cook a salve in a huge cauldron on the fire. Daniel and David would spend hours in the forest combing the fields for different herbs for their secret remedy. Mm. Once this salve was made, they would apply it to the infected areas or the cancerous areas in layers. And it was a process that took a little bit of time to raise this to the outside of the body. So they would have a little horsehair brush, which they would paint the cancerous area with. And as time went by, this cancer would raise to the outside of the body. And over a period of time, it would actually fall off in a crust. This wasn't overnight, but this it took a little bit of time, but they had an amazing ratio of success. But they would raise the cancer to the outside of the body through these applications of this remedy until it actually fell off.
Mm, extraordinary. And I mean, there is a bit of a tradition, obviously, of salves of one kind or another. But from what it sounds, the Rhys Evans' salve was unique. It doesn't sound like it was exactly like other people's. You know, there's famous salves used by Hoxie, and there's black salve is quite commonly in use these days. But they certainly don't seem to be the same thing, do they?
Well, I wish I had some answers, but this was a great secret in my family, and my ancestors would never divulge the ingredients of the salve. You know, I was told, you know, one of the active ingredients was red clover, but I don't think there was any other remedy in history that had a ratio of curing cancer as the Rhys Evans cordovan cancer cure.
Mm-hmm. But from what I hear, it was sort of painted on rather than being a sort of paste of any kind. The actual finished salve was a liquid. And I've read that it was clear as well, which rather sets it apart from some of the other things that have been used or are being used.
As I said, I've never read or in my research found anything that cured cancer the way this did. And it's somewhat of a travesty that this wasn't made public for the rest of the world.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a big story, which we're going to get into as time went on. You mentioned then that Daniel went out collecting with David. David is going to feature later in the story, and that's his son, correct?
Correct.
Right.
Yes, unfortunately, with the Welsh, we have a lot of Evanses, Johns, and Davids. it's a little bit of a research nightmare.
Okay. Eventually, the word spread pretty far and wide, and at a certain point, the Daily Mail got in there to have a look and see what was happening. And I wonder if you just read us what they wrote in 1906.
Certainly. For more than 20 years, these humble practitioners have been treating all kinds of disease with ointments and salves made entirely of herbs. But only lately has their fame spread abroad. They originally used their remedies as a side issue only, but for some years now they have been kept busy visiting their patients. The pathology of cancer interests them little. They believe they can demonstrate that metastases in neighboring glands are not separate growths originating from cancer cells brought to the glands through the lymphatics from the original growth, but that these secondary involvements are extensions of the roots of the primary growth by direct continuity. Their method is to apply a herbal preparation to the cancer, which according to them causes the roots from all sides to withdraw into the original growth, which then falls off. After this, the skin heals over the wound. They claim that they never have turned away any cases, and that they have had only one or two failures in many years. Patients have come to them from all over Wales and Scotland, and a few as far away as the London hospitals. The brothers live unpretentiously about 2 miles from Cardigan, and every morning walk into town with the preparation of their remedy. They keep no system of books and have no fixed charges. They have a small surgery where there are a few beds for the worst cases, and where some of the patients are able to come and see them. Here also are collections of specimens in alcohol. At present, there are about 45 persons in Cardigan under treatment by the Resevens. Cases of lupus, rodent ulcer, epithelioma, and true serous of the breast. Everywhere there seems to be the same utmost confidence in these simple physicians, far from bringing advertising quacks with their desire for notoriety. Everywhere there seems to be the utmost confidence in these simple physicians, far from being advertising quacks with a desire for notoriety. They are deeply religious men and commence every treatment by praying for success and urging their patients also to put their trust in God rather than themselves for a cure.
Thank you. Yeah, so this is when the controversy really got going, and although they had some high-level support for their work, it's notable that some of the most damning attacks were from within medicine. By 1907, they were being described as a sensation with their marvellous cures. The media began a bit of a crusade on behalf of the cure and openly started attacking the BMA for not taking it seriously. Finally, they were goaded into making a public response in the British Medical Journal. And can you read us what they wrote?
If cancer has not met its conqueror, it is not the fault of the newspapers. Hardly a week passes without our being told that the long-sought cure has been discovered. The article then goes on. One man had cancer for 20 years. He underwent the X-ray treatment at the London hospital for 10 months and got from a London specialist a certificate that he was the victim of a most chronic form of cancer for which there was no known cure. He was then treated by the Cardigan herbalist, with the result given on the authority of his daughter that he had been cured of the deadly disease of cancer. Another said to have had cancer for 15 years, for which he was repeatedly treated at a London hospital, and now is under the care of the Cardigan herbalist. And although he has lost a portion of his gums, one lip, and a part of his nose, and it may be added he is over 80 years old, a sanguine of success. The article concludes, in all this, we see nothing but old, old story, which the inborn and ineradical folly of man makes new. Does not David Hume say, in spite of all warnings, we see one generation after another, with our eyes wide open, walk into the same gulf of fraud, quackery and imposture?
So, what effect did this pronouncement from the highest authorities in the land have on the brothers and their cancer cure?
Well, the article kind of had the opposite effect that it was written for. It actually stimulated people's interest all over the country, not only the country, but all over the world. Slowly but surely, Cardigan started filling up with cancer patients. These people were suffering from dreadful forms of cancer. There was actually a little bit of animosity from the people of the town of Cardigan, because all the hotels were booked up and no one could stay anywhere because cancer patients were taking up all the rooms. So after all, it was a holiday resort town originally. In those days, they didn't really realize that they believed that you could catch cancer by a shake of the hand, or they didn't understand what was happening. But this article started an avalanche of people to descend upon Cardigan.
There was a bit of a stalemate, wasn't there? Because basically the BMA were just asking the brothers to hand out their secret, and they were pretty reluctant to do it. But mm-hmm. one of the brothers' champions, Mr. Stead, he proposed a way forward to the BMA that didn't involve the brothers giving away their closely guarded secret, which otherwise they were making a prerequisite of any investigation. So it sounded like a pretty fair proposal to me. Do you want to tell us about it?
Well, Mr. Stead was, he came up with a plan and approached the British government that if some cancer patients were willing and their families were willing, that the cancer patients that the Resevens treat were examined by two British Medical Association doctors and were deemed to have cancer. And he wanted the Resevens to treat them in conjunction with the British Medical Association for once and for all, get this cancer cure out in the open.
So perhaps you could just read out Mr. Stead's proposition.
Mr. Stead proposed to investigate the claims of the Cardigan cancer curers. With that object, he asked for cases of external cancer, certified as being unmistakable cases of genuine cancer, declared to be incurable by the cancer hospital or by properly qualified men. If three or four of these unmistakable, duly certified cases of inoperable cancer can be obtained, and if the sufferers and the relatives are willing to submit to the ordeal, he declares himself willing to make arrangements with the Evans brothers for treating them in Cardigan, on that sole condition that they are willing to have the result of the experiment published with full particulars for the satisfaction of the public. No case of internal cancer need apply. In every case, medical certificates signed by at least two medical men of good standing as to being a case of genuine cancer must be produced to ensure us in advance against the usual cry of after cure that it was not really cancer after all.
And what did the BMA say in response to Mr. Stead's proposal?
Well, the British Medical Association did not go for Mr. Stead's plan. They came up with trivial and inconsequential excuses as to why. The bottom line is that they didn't like it because it wasn't their cure.
Okay, so meanwhile, the BMJ article had done little to slow down the increasing popularity and exposure of the Cardigan cancer cure, and eventually the BMA sent their man, Dr. Hadwin, out to take a look. Do you want to tell us what happened there?
So Dr. Hadwin did a lot of things. He was out to prove that the Cardigan cancer cure wasn't a viable cancer cure, to disprove everything the Resevens were doing. Came to Cardigan, he was welcomed with open arms. He was a little bit stealthy in the fact that he approached the chemist. He wanted to find out what drugs, what ingredients were purchased from the chemist. He also asked the Resevens if he might take one of the cancers that was kept in jars on display in the little hospital in their house. And Daniel said, no, you're not taking this. He was out to prove them wrong, and he wasn't going to give this the green light. It was something that went against the grain. He believed there was zinc chloride in the cure. He believed he knew what the cure was. The Wee Sevens didn't know what they were doing. They're two country bumpkin hicks. And in conclusion, he wrote a damning one-side report.
So at around this time, the brothers had some very substantial offers for their secret, didn't they?
Well, that's correct, Robin. There was numerous offers of monies for the cure. The brothers weren't interested in money. They wanted to see that cure out in the public, curing the masses. There was a gentleman, a vice consul, his name was Dubois. He offered them £45,000, which back in the day must be in the millions. And the brothers, without batting an eyelid, turned this down. But this was one of many offers for money. The goal was to see this treatment under the umbrella of the British Medical Association, treating the masses.
And this chap, the reason I think he was prepared to offer such an amazing sum of money was because they'd actually just treated him, hadn't they?
That's correct. They treated a form of cancer on Mr. Dubois, and he was so impressed with the treatment that he ended up offering them this vast sum of money.
So that in itself is a pretty amazing testimony to the effectiveness of the treatment, isn't it?
Yes.
Okay. Anyway, Mr. Hadwin's report, he put it out, and it was published and filled three whole pages of the newspaper, and it did have much the effect that he was hoping for, did it not?
I'm afraid it did. With the Wee Sevens, it took the wind out of their sails. They were expecting something completely different. They were expecting praise. They were expecting the British Medical Association to embrace their cure. And it had a disastrous effect on the Wee Sevens. They were in their late 60s by this time. And shortly after this happened, we were in the midst of the First World War occurring, and John, which was the other brother that you don't hear much about, was killed. He went to war in 1914, got wounded, and then went back to war and was killed just before the end of the war. Yeah, and fought in all the major battles. It's just amazing, this guy. And he was like 21 when he died, but he'd been shot three times in the chest and went back to the front again.
Wow.
Amazing. Oh. Yeah, and I reached John, and I just found him very recently, and his records were destroyed in London during the Blitz, and there were no records of him whatsoever. So I started searching all the cenotaphs in Wales, and I found him on a cenotaph in Cardigan. And just an amazing horror story for a 20-year-old guy. He died at 21, and he was wounded and shot in the chest, went back to the front, and he was killed just before the end of the war. Just tragic. Shortly afterwards, Daniel died. And, well, that could have been the end of the story if it were not for one of John's children, David Wee Sevens. David Wee Sevens was actually a medic in the First World War, and he picked up where Daniel had left off. And by 1919, when his father died, he knew the ingredients of the oil, and he knew the details to use it.
So now we start on the next chapter in the story of the Cardigan Cancer Cure with David Wee Sevens. He came back from the First World War, and do you want to just say a bit about what he got up to then?
So David returned from the First World War and wanted to carry on the work of Daniel and John. The war had been going on for 5 years, and the Cardigan Cancer Cure, it wasn't on the top of people's minds. He found work very hard to come by. People didn't trust him anymore. But one day he got a call from the Dowager Marquess of Bute. The Marquess explained to him that he had a maid who had some terrible cancer that was on her neck and on her cheek. and David agreed to treat her. The lady was 58 years old, and she was treated and cured. The Marquis was extremely impressed with the treatment and offered David a place in London to practice for 1 year. So David VII moved to London. He had a lovely practice, but alas, he didn't have many patients. And for the first 6 months, he struggled for patients. One day, he got a call from a gentleman named Hannon Swiffer. Hannon Swiffer was a writer of the day, was very interested in the patients, and he examined them, and he took great interest and became a believer in the Cardigan cancer cure. The result was an article in a publication called The Light, and it was a glowing review that ultimately drew a lot of people to the Cardigan cancer cure again. David's practice started growing via this article, and he found a great comrade in Hannon Swiffer.
So around this time, Rhys Evans started to get a bit more public support from notable figures. There's a letter written to the Liverpool Evening Express on the 28th of November 1920 from a popular novelist, Marie Corelli. I think you've got that there. Could you read it out for us?
So will you allow me to confer the statement made in your column by David Rhys Evans concerning the cure discovered by his father and uncle for cancer? By a case which came under my personal observations, a Miss Rawlings living in our neighbourhood, the mother of a valued member of our household, suffered severely from external cancer, and the doctors she consulted told her that the case was hopeless. I then, with the consent of her family, sent her to Cardigan, and then Daniel and John Evans undertook her cure, which was a complete success. This was some 12 years ago, when she was about 58 years of age. There had been no return of the trouble. All disfigurement of the face and neck had vanished, leaving the skin healthy and clear. And at the present time, she is living in the enjoyment of perfect health from a terrible affliction, thanks to the Rhys Evans remedy, which has been admitted by the doctors who initially diagnosed the illness and then saw it cured as simply miraculous.
So, he was set up nicely in London, and now he had a nice steady stream of patients coming in, but I understand that that wasn't the whole story. There was already a bit of trouble brewing.
Yes, he saw a huge change of fortune as a result of the article and received a steady stream of patients. Trouble was on the horizon as a lady named Mrs. Burrell, who was treated by David Rhys Evans, but did not follow his instructions and her cancer got worse. She then went to the hospital and was told that she had terminal cancer. She started receiving radium, and she ultimately blamed David Rhys Evans for her predicament, even though she did not go to all the sessions and the treatments. The British Medical Association was looking for anyone to turn against Rhys Evans, to discredit their work. And ultimately, Mrs. Burrell took David Rhys Evans to court. The papers lapped this up. It was front page news, and it was spoken about on the street. Once in court, he was scorned by the judge. He actually said at one point in the trial, "If you can cure cancer in 5 weeks, cancer is not as bad as a cold in the head, sir." It was a mockery. And this is what David Rhys Evans had to put up with in the courts of England. During the court case, he was accused of using caustic fluid in the Cardigan cancer cure, at which point a Dr. James Bolton of Yeovil said he was prepared to drink the liquid in court. It was a long and difficult case with no certainty for Rhys Evans, but in the end, the jury would not find him guilty. Even though David Rhys Evans won the court case, he had a very quiet 20 years. So he quietly worked away to regain his reputation. And by 1945, he started to attract the attention of well-known people again. Fife Robinson, later of the BBC Tonight, while working for the Picture Post, he came across Rhys Evans and over a long period visited him regularly and documented his cases. Fife Robinson put the idea of an article to the Picture Post.
but it met solid resistance. But he didn't give up and kept presenting more and more evidence until they finally agreed. This was over a period of 3 years. Picture Post did not want to be embarrassed, did not want to be the writers of a quack cure in their paper. So they agreed on condition that they first did their own costly investigation, which took over 3 years. They collected lots of photographic evidence, but were unable to get any cooperation from any medical doctors to ascertain that it was certainly a cancer cure. Even though some of the patients were given up on by the medical profession, some were privately astonished, but none would stand up and be counted.
So it's around this time, I think, that David had another break, if you like. During the time they were doing the research, he got an invitation to America.
He was invited by a hospital to conduct a trial. What they did was they gave him 16 patients. 10 were terminally ill. The ultimate result was that he cured 9 patients. 2 were a partial success. The cancer was reduced but not cleared. And 1 was a failure. And 4 died during treatment. But these, you have to remember, were all terminally ill patients that have been given up on by orthodox medicine.
That's incredible, isn't it? Out of 16 patients to have 9 successes and 2 partial successes is extraordinary, isn't it?
Yeah. And to have a ratio of curing 9 out of 16 is, and these were people that were given up on by normal orthodox medicine. It's absolutely a phenomenal thing.
Yeah. Okay, so eventually the Picture Post gets its article together and publishes it in the UK. What happened?
Well, the Picture Post put out an entire magazine on the Cardigan cancer cure. Britain went crazy. Europe went crazy. There were calls to the Ministry of Health to look into this cure. And the Ministry of Health all of a sudden found itself under a lot of pressure to answer the public. And 4 heavyweights were assigned to the task of a full and fair investigation of the Rhys Evans Cardigan cancer cure. They included Sir Robert Robertson, President of the Royal Society, Sir Alexander Fleming of penicillin fame, Sir Ernest Rock Carling, Chairman of the Standing Advisory Committee of Cancer and Radiotherapy, and Professor Hemsworth, Secretary of the Medical Research Council. David Rhys Evans was ecstatic. This is what he had been wanting and trying for almost all his life. But he stipulated that the committee should concern itself with actual treatments of patients rather than just past records.
Okay, so we got this formidable committee got together. What happened?
Well, Robin, what happened was absolutely nothing. They didn't investigate one patient. They did not talk to a doctor. They did not witness the cure. It was a sham. Nothing was done whatsoever. They deemed it not a practical cancer cure at all.
But they were charged with making a report. What happened to the report?
So the government refused to publish the report. But this was not quite over yet. The Rhys Evans supporters at the Picture Post consulted a barrister. The barrister had access to it and reported that not a single patient was ever seen by any member of the committee. He also said that in no single case was Rhys Evans invited to consider the evidence available to the committee, or to give his recollection, or to discuss the matter. A statement to the House of Commons in May 1952 summarized the conclusions. Mr. Rhys Evans has been unable to provide us with evidence that convinces us of his having obtained lasting success in any cases of cancer, with the probable exception of the case of Rodin Arsa. This statement was to mark the end of his public career. The barrister noted that in the table of cases, people who died of cancer, but those who lived all fell into one of 3 categories. A, never had cancer. B, cannot surely be said to have had cancer. And C, cured of cancer before the resentence treatment. He also points out that rodent ulcers are cancer and that clearly the resentence treatment was superior to the conventional methods.
I believe that the Pitcher Post took a look at the situation, though, and came up with a very different picture, and they looked at the 100 best British cases.
That's right, Robin. 40 cases known to have no reoccurrence in over 5 years. 23 cases less than 5 years since treatment, but no reoccurrence. 20 cases known to have died, believed to be from other causes, but records are incomplete. And 15 cases were absolutely untraceable.
That's a pretty different picture, isn't it?
This upsets me so much, but yeah.
So there he was. He was slammed down again by the British government for the last time. He never re-emerged. What did he do? What happened for the rest of his life?
You know, he died before I was born. He died 2 years before I was born. I'm not sure he did. Yeah, I think at the conclusion, he just shrank into obscurity, really.
But what happened to the treatment?
Okay, yeah, that's the question, isn't it? After the glowing report by the Picture Post, David Resettance sank into obscurity, treating a number of cases, but never been in the public eye once more. He died in 1961 in Brighton, England. And from what we've known, and I've spoke to a lot of relatives over the years, he always told us that the Cardigan cancer cure was locked in a safe in London. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, if I knew, I would have had this cure out a long time ago and saved a lot of people. Now, it's caused great pain in our family over the years, just to know that somewhere in our family we had the power to cure cancer. And we feel we've had absolutely no help from the British government, the British Medical Association, even though there are millions of people that were behind my grandfather and my great-grandparents. They were cures of cancer, but they're lost to history now. It's been a funny thing in our family. I've always known about this. My sister tried to chase it down years ago. My dad just would keep on saying that it was locked in a vault in London. And I think one of the active ingredients was red clover. You know, probably other people know more than I do. But just a travesty. The people just wanted to help people. It wasn't a money thing, too. The Resettance weren't really interested in making heaps and heaps of money.
They turned down some huge sums of money, didn't they?
Yeah, and they wanted this cure to be adopted by the British Medical Association so people could be helped. Mm. And that's basically it. And, you know, they used to cure cancer for, you know, a turnip and a parsnip.
Mm. Well, it's a massive loss, clearly. I mean, there's almost no way that it could have gone through the rigors of the investigations that it had, achieved the results it did, and actually not really worked. It must have worked, at least to some extent. And it's been, you know, it's a tragedy that it's completely lost. I mean, do you think that it's ever going to turn up one day? Do you think we'll ever know what it was?
I don't. Ultimately, this cure made the generations afterwards quite miserable because no one would ever talk about it. We had a very stoic Welsh family, mm-hmm. a family who believed children were seen and not heard, and they were very bitter. It made them all very bitter indeed. To be honest, there is one person still alive who might have a couple of answers to this, but she doesn't talk to me much on the phone,
mm-hmm.
and she's very hard to deal with, and yes.
So do you suspect that actually it may still exist, the formula for this, somewhere?
Well, David had a sister who was named Grace. Grace lives in the States, and if you phone her, she sounds like she lives in Wales. She sounds like I have a real tough time understanding her, but that's the only person I know that might know what happened to this cure. It's a travesty of history, you know. It's an awful thing.
All right. Well, look, it's been fascinating talking to you about this, Nick. Thanks so much for bringing the kind of personal angle on it in the way you have. As you say, the whole thing's a complete travesty. It's not a unique story, unfortunately, within cancer. There have been other things that have been absolutely hounded to death and lost. This is a particularly tragic one. But the lessons to be learned from this story, they're still out there. The same forces are still at work today. There are other things being suppressed and not allowed to come to the public's attention for just the same reasons, which are definitely not good ones. So I think it's great to hear the story and to learn what we can from it about the situation we have now.
I absolutely agree with you, Robin. You have to get these things out. It's a changing world. Herbalists, naturalists are part of our regular regime nowadays. The world has changed. It's so horrible that this has been forgotten, and that so many other cancer cures have been shelved or discredited. As I said, it's a travesty, and hopefully the world changes, and hopefully the world will embrace cancer cures, herbalism, because it's helped us to treat ourselves before we had organized medicine, and it worked.
Okay, we'll finish it there. Thank you very much indeed, Nick.
My pleasure, Robin, and all the best, mate.
All right, and to you, thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, it's a sensational and, as already been said many times, tragic story. What makes it worse is that it's not that unusual when it comes to the world of medicine and unconventional approaches. A cheap, natural approach presents, as it has for well over 100 years, a threat on many levels. It threatens the status quo of expertise and knowledge with all the associated pride, prestige and power. And even more importantly, it threatens the business of medicine, for whom it is a serious commercial threat. Whereas this may have sounded like a tale from the dim and distant past, we should be under no illusion about the presence of the same threats today, along with the same forces to keep control of the status quo. As the level of understanding of health issues by the public has grown, some, but far from all, doctors have begun to relinquish the doctor as God model in favour of a collaborative approach. This, of course, is wonderful. But the agenda of business is the same as ever: to make money, not to save lives or to make people well enough to have no need of medicine. And so we find that cheap, out-of-patent drugs that could help people with cancer fall in with natural remedies when it comes to receiving the disinterest and the disdain of medicine. It can be a challenge to distinguish between proper science and science as a blunt instrument of business or medics, used to suppress any perceived threats. You will have noticed how in our story, the big guns were rolled out to suppress the Cardigan cancer cure with an almost complete lack of real science. You simply can't beat a national hero of medicine for this stuff, and Alexander Fleming clearly fit the bill. One of the best known examples of this celebrity scientist's power was the case of Sir Richard Dole. With his establishment of the incontrovertible link between smoking and cancer, he clearly represented an absolutely massive threat to all sorts of industries. He needed controlling. Well, after a life of pretty much royalty, all resting on the foundation of this one major breakthrough, it was discovered following his death that he'd actually sold out wholesale to a raft of different industries, giving them the seal of safety for their toxic products at a price. What can be helpful in discerning an ulterior motive in scientific argument is the lack of originality in them. Once you begin to look into the journeys of natural approaches to cancer, you hear the same tried and trusted concepts being rolled out over and over again. Dismissing authentic cancer patients, as we heard, as either wrongly diagnosed or having been cured by some previous failed conventional method are textbook examples. And using the excuse that there's no known method of action or that the ingredients for a remedy are not known is clearly nothing whatsoever to do with whether it works or not.
What is completely apparent is the complete absence of the interests of people with cancer and a total preoccupation with power games. If you're interested to get a really clear-eyed overview of the territory of suppression, which I would say is an important factor in understanding the case for or against a possible approach to cancer, then you can't beat a blog post which I'll put the link to on our website, along with links to other material relevant to today's show. With this knowledge, you'll be better prepared to discriminate and to judge the motives at work behind arguments that are dressed up as scientific. If there are any amateur sleuths listening who fancy a challenge, then it seems that it's not impossible that the Cardigan Cancer Cure formula still exists somewhere. Find it, and you could do the world a favour. There is one thing we have now that wasn't available to the Rhys Evans, and that is the power to safeguard such information from now on the internet. Public sharing of such information protects it against both disappearance and profiteering. Rather than give it to no one, you give it to everyone. That's all for this week's show. I hope that was interesting. To find the link to the blog post I mentioned, as well as to other material related to the Cardigan Cancer Cure, go to yestolife.org.uk and click the Yes to Life show logo on the homepage. A quick reminder that we're now taking entries for the Yes to Life 10K, which is taking place on Saturday the 6th of October in London's beautiful Victoria Park. If you're affiliated with the running club, the entry is £18 and standard entry is £20, and everyone will receive a t-shirt and a medal. So to enter, head over to yestolife10k, that's yestolife10k.org. Please join me again next week for another Yes to Life show. Goodbye.